I hope your next performer is here and hasn't died of a heroin overdose, but, you know, we're comedians. We're depressed. I can't get an erection unless I cut myself these days, so I hope you're in the same boat, living on the edge. Smoke pot and worship aliens. I've been Eric Kallerbach. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Kallerbach. With me, Wild Bill Dykes.
Hey!
Whoa, what's going on? This guy is a pioneer I'm catching up on. You know, there was no scene. It was a wasteland before Katrina. Ah. 2003, 2002, 2001.
You
gotta
Comedy go
in New
back.
Orleans?
Further,
what?
You got to go further back to the 90s when it was Amberjacks run by P.H. Fred and... The comedy crew was this group of people who took this comedy class by Mike Parnon. And Parnon went into these really, really horrible... Can we curse on this one?
Of course.
These little shitholes all over, like, St. Bernard Parish and out in Metairie. And would set up these guerrilla comedy shows that you would have to do in front of people who just literally palpably hated you. We did not
want to smoke a drink here.
Totally, dude. We had...
This is Kennebra.
It was... Oh, there was one place. It was an apartment complex... lounge is literally in the apartment complex. They converted it into their bar.
They like moved some gym equipment around. They're like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, working out. We're gonna start a comedy show.
Those were the guerrilla days back when I think Brown was still around. Brown was the biggest thing going on. That's when Ken Jeong was still there and Andy and Fred, Mike O'Connell. And now Mike O'Connell and Jeong obviously are huge. You know, they got their thing going in California. Ken, Dr. Ken. But, yeah, that was it, man, in Amberjacks. And Amberjacks was a paid room. It was over in Lakeshore. And you could make 100, 200 bucks doing 20, 40-minute sets. Mm-hmm. So anything, everything went to shit. As always, I ran a comedy festival for a few years with a guy, and that became an utter clusterfuck of personality clashes. But it ran for 3 years. 9/11 was the last year that we were successful. The New Orleans Comedy Festival.
I think 9/11 was a big win for a lot of America.
Yeah, huge. Everybody made out like bandits.
Well, the military-industrial complex, not so much anyone else.
Well, we had guys drive in from Pennsylvania, from California, who drove in to do this festival because all air traffic had been, you know.
Oh, wow.
So I'd get a call from a guy in Boston, like, is this still happening? And we're like, well, it started today. I go... You know, I talked to the partner at the time, Tim, and I'm like, what should we do? I was like, fuck it, let's just do it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And half the shows were sold out. I mean, it was a lot of catharsis, a lot of, you know, crying and people, you know, just acting completely insane. But it was the last year of that festival was pretty badass. Then the next year, the guy who ran it with me tried to steal it. So I shut him down.
Okay.
Yeah, total.
He broke his knees, old school?
He could. Well, I did. I took all his venues. Mm-hmm. He basically, because I had set up all the venues, he took the company and the LLC, and I took every venue and sponsor.
What is it about human nature that, like, you know, one person does one thing, well, oh, overreaction, we all hate each other forever now. What is that? Because I see that spiral affecting a lot of the comedy scene in New Orleans today.
The scene here... suffers from a sort of blinders situation. They don't think they do, but they do. A lot of people are really wrapped up in what's happening here as the scene, and good for them. They care about it. They really, you know, they're proud of what's going on and the progress that's been made, but they don't remember the past. They don't see a future. Hmm. They're just stuck in what's going on right now, and as opposed to working together to try to build bridges and lines of communication, it just becomes this my way or the highway. You can get fucked. I hate you because you did this to my brother one time.
Can I tell you a little story about Houston?
Oh, of course, I'm from there. So
Houston, right now, I heard about the comedy scene. The whole comedy scene collectively works very hard on one document, and that one document is, what are the open mics available? What are the book shows available? Who runs every single show in every single venue in every single... They get together and collectively update a document. If it's like, oh, your show is counter-programming my show? No. More scene.
They don't care, right?
We're
well,
all friends.
Houston went through a similar situation.
We're all going to do each other's shows? We're all friends.
Well, I can give you insight into Houston. What happened with Houston is Danny Martinez's room, which was the Comedy Showcase, he sold it, and it became the Joke Joint. And a lot of the Showcase comics, and then the Laugh Stop, which was the anchor of the scene for years and years, shut down. So the scene was in complete and utter disarray. I mean, they were at each other's throats. It was as bad as here, if not worse, in a lot of ways. And they realized that just in time. Mm-hmm. They were like, look, we're Houston. I mean, Stanhope recorded one of his first CDs at the Laugh Stop. Mm-hmm. You know, Attell was a regular. Hedberg was a regular. I mean, they had that. When I lived here, when I first started doing stand-up, there was no scene in this city. You could get on stage maybe once a week if you were lucky. And it was a shithole room. I would drive twice a month and go stay in Houston and do Laugh Stop, do Showcase, and then come back here. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of my secondary scene. In fact, my roommate in L.A. right now is a comic I know from the old Houston Laugh Stop days. And she used to tour with Ralphie May and Joey Diaz and a lot of those cats. And we knew each other through that same sort of network. New Orleans was kind of the weird, retarded cousin of the Houston scene. Not retarded, that's probably not a good way of saying it, but it was the...
Smaller. I mean, there's only...
The offshoot. And when we did the festival, a shit ton of Houston comics came out to support it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were like, fuck yeah, A, we want to go to New Orleans.
We'll be doing a little drinking, and a little partying, debauchery, right? And then we'll do the show.
And B, it's another opportunity to go do what we love in another market, because, you know, this place is, audience-wise, completely different from pretty much anywhere else you're going to perform.
Yeah.
And I've performed in 45 states, in 6 foreign countries, so.
So what's the timeline of New Orleans now? Where are we? So you had your last festival. What happened? Did you go back to Houston? What has happened to the scene timeline in New Orleans?
Well, there was a point there where, after that one festival broke up, there were just rooms being run. We ran the thing out of the House of Blues. Howling Wolf came on board. True Brew. Then Katrina hit. And I came back 3.5 weeks after the storm. And we did... Mark Maron flew in for us and did a fundraiser at the Howling Wolf with a couple other comics. Todd Berry came in, did a show for us. And then we started running an open mic upstairs at Lucy's.
Mm-hmm.
And that became the first real running of the mic.
Okay, Rick Shapiro's calling me. I'm going to take this phone call.
All right.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Rick Shapiro? I'm with Wild Bill Dykes on the phone.
What's up, Rick?
What's up, here you go?
No, what's up? What's up, Rick?
Is there a how do I find out if I'm booked or not?
Look, I looked at the list today. The only show you were booked on was yesterday at 8 with me. But, you know, if you want me to come and grab you, maybe I can, maybe you can perform on the 10 o'clock show. There's also an open mic at 11:15.
I'm going to just pay me as well. I'll be done like 40 minutes. That's too late, right?
You're at the hotel?
Oh, I'm at Pesci, this fucking idiot restaurant.
Yeah? Okay, so
I'd rather just hang out and do comedy.
All right. Well, look, send me a text when you're out of the restaurant and, like, send me a text of the restaurant and I can grab you from there and bring you to the La Nuit Comedy Theater and see if I can get a spot for you, you know? But you gotta text me the address, Rick.
You got what?
Text me the address of where you're at if you're done eating.
Okay, I will.
All right, I'll come and get you. I'll try to get you a spot here.
What?
I said I'll try to get you a spot at the La Nuit.
It's cool. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it a lot.
All right, buddy. Yeah. Tell me where you're at.
You still, asshole.
All right, buddy. I'll see you in a little bit.
Okay, man.
Me and Rick have been hanging out. It's been fun.
Have
you ever hung out with Rick Shapiro?
Never hung out with him. I know of him.
But... He's pretty fucking great.
All right, sorry about that. No, that's all right. Back to the thing. Then we came back and we started running shows at House of Blues, Howling Wolf, and One Eye Jacks. And that's when we had Tom Rhodes come in. We had Scalero. Stanhope came in like 3 or 4 times. And it was going well. And I don't know, somewhere a schism happened. I know that True and those cats came back from Austin and formed their own theater here. And then there became this weird sort of power play between the forces that wanted to run comedy in New Orleans, which I was done with, by the way, at that point.
Between the New Move and the La Nuit. There was a power even
more
play.
Even more than that. I mean, there was, you got Red Bean and Carrie B and those guys who do comedy. Gumbo, you have other factions. Like, there was just this weird sort of disjointed... And the New Movement was the smartest of them all because they were like, well, we have a inner... information juggernaut. We're gonna grab the media. We're gonna, you know, and very, very intelligently handled their ascendance. As far as the way it is now, I don't know. I'm kind of glad I'm not part of it because it feels like... It doesn't feel like there's a unity to me. It feels like there's this sort of weird, disjointed...
Yeah.
Encampments that are at each other's throat. Okay. And they claim not, but... Right. I know better.
There is 100% we're the New Movement and we hate the La Nuit Theater. And the La Nuit Theater seems to be more of a passive reactor to the hey, why are you guys sending me 50 tweets a day saying how much I suck? That's what I see. That's just what I see.
And that's kind of what I see too. You're right.
And from my perspective, it's like, okay, well, you know, this is like a civil war in the comedy scene. And it is completely fucking ridiculous.
Well, it doesn't help anyone.
It doesn't help anyone. And all energy put into this feud is energy not into promoting your own fucking shit.
Exactly.
If you have a show, promote it. And then maybe have one person from the La Nuit. If you don't think one person from the La Nuit scene who does that mic all the time isn't funny enough for your show, you're kind of fucking stupid, okay? And you also don't understand... That like in Los Angeles, okay, I've had friends that have made it, okay? Yeah. That like real, there's a real possibility of making it. And in my opinion, in New Orleans, you're a training camp to go to New York or Los Angeles to actually make it, okay? So then the people that have made a real stay here are going to stay here for the rest of their lives because they have gone to New York and failed, or they have gone there and failed, and they come back... And they're clinging to, I've done this 13 years. I want to run this shit. And then they get real angry. And then they send 90 texts a day about how much. But it's like, this is only a camp. Not one person in New Orleans is going to make money living here doing comedy, period, ever. So let's all just be a college for each other, in my opinion, from my experience.
I mean, there were some
Los Angeles and New York.
I made money doing the road, touring, living here, doing not obviously enough. It wasn't like I was skyrocketing into Conan or, right. You know, and even, you know, Sean Patton, he had to leave. Theo Vaughn, when, you know, Theo came to record his Netflix special back here. He asked me specifically, do you think I should do it in New Orleans or should I tape it in LA and pretend it's New Orleans? I'm like, do it in New Orleans, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your home. You know, you've got enough comics there that are good enough to handle that audience that you'll have a good opening act.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started asking about opening acts, and obviously, who am I going to suggest? Not the toxic assholes who are constantly on the attack and what have you. I'm suggesting people that are easy to work with, who are going to promote, and who are going to bring a crowd. And
be nice and professional.
And maybe they're not necessarily the funniest or the most talented comics in the scene, but they're professional enough and funny enough that they can handle what they're doing. And that's basically the extension of the scene across the country. Once you get known as an awful, horrible person who does nothing but tear shit down, nobody wants to fucking work with you. I don't care if they tell you they do when they're here. You know, okay, Hannibal Buress might sit on your couch and smoke a joint with you and say, oh my God, if you're ever in LA, I'll hook you up.
Right.
The reality of it is when you get out to L.A., it's probably not going to happen unless it's convenient for that person at that time.
Right.
Especially
because then you go,
if you're a dick,
all these other 12 people that are hanging around Hannibal Buress are asking for a favor every single day, and they live in his city.
And half of them are from Chicago, where he's from. So they're coming out of a scene that he came up in.
Right.
So you're sixth on the list, plus everything you post is negative and nasty and hateful. You're going to be one of the last people that anybody's going to want to help. And that was the message we were trying to get across. It's like, look, I get you're angry with certain people and you're angry with certain situations. Yvonne had no idea that certain people booked on this show were not good people.
Right.
And granted, that's her fault for not researching it. But you can't have a crusade based around somebody's just sideline ignorance that's powered by such hatred. If all you're doing is destroying, you're not building anything at all. You're not even building your own scene. All you're doing is making yourself look ugly and petty.
Yeah, but it's like if you posted to Twitter 20 times, hey, my show's here, hey, my show's here, I think that's productive.
Right.
I mean,
but if you're like, hey, this person booked a rapist, this person booked a child molester beater, this person is a horrible person who's, you know.
Let me ask you, do you think Burger King has never hired one rapist? Okay, like probably 40% of their fucking employees are. You know, it's got nothing to do with burgers, you know?
No. And
I don't know.
It's negativity for negativity's sake, and it's... And again, like you said, you were spot on. You have an active hatred towards one thing, and then you have a passive reaction towards, why are you actively hating me? Even though there are... I know for a fact that there are things that have happened in the past between these groups of people that justify some anger and some bullshit. But fucking let it go, dude. You're so... And, that's what they got mad at me about, because I made a comment that you're in a tiny little scene here. This is an itty bitty little scene.
And they're like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck
you.
No,
it's not. It's giant. We're huge. We're, everybody's recognizing
us. My cock
us
is
now.
Big. I am God. I am God.
So
what are we fighting over?
It's like Sam Kinison said, it's sand. You're fighting over fucking sand.
Yeah.
You know, that was the old joke back in the day. It was like, there's nothing here. Why are we fighting over nothing? Let's work to build something. But that's not going on right now because everybody's got their own little fiefdoms and their little pissing contests. And I forgot how bad it was until I got back home and I started reading all the Facebook and Twitter posts. And I'm just like, oh, my God, you guys.
They put me on there, you know, and because I had on episode 104 one of my favorite comics in the scene, the Dr. Jeffrey McCormick, entertainer extraordinaire, who... Honestly, when I see him perform, makes me laugh more than anybody, and I'm going to stand by that for the rest of my life.
Right.
He makes me laugh. I had him on my podcast, and they thought I was being abusive towards him because I asked him if he ever showed his dick on a bus, and then all of a sudden I wake up one morning, Eric Hollerbach is performing at the NOLA Comedy Theaters Festival, handicap abuser. Huh?
Oh,
handicap
God.
Abuser.
So you're guilty of a proxy because you...
But I have... Okay, so I recorded a podcast with somebody that I said was hilarious. I'm in an equal category of having a scarlet letter to... You know what I mean? They're like, as a bullet point, Eric Hollerbach, handicap abuser. What?
And the shit that was coming out, I'm like...
Let's just be friends. Let's do each other's shows and be friends.
Yeah.
What is this, all this bullshit? I don't understand
it's
it.
It's always been the Achilles heel of the scene. And I think...
You're tearing us down before we ever have a chance to get our footing.
You've done L.A.
Yeah.
Enough to know that even as impersonal and bullshit that L.A. can be as a comedy scene, it's still pretty fucking supportive and pretty much... Yeah, we're going to make you bring six people, but we're going to do everything we can to help you out.
They're very nice. They're very professional. I've never been screamed at for making fun of a host. I've never been banned for life for making fun of a host at the Hi-Ho. I've never been banned from any club ever in L.A. Because if the host makes fun of you, you make fun of him. Ha, ha, ha. Here's the show.
Fair
the
game.
Audience laughs. Right. Let's have a good show. People aren't banning you because, oh, you made fun of me? What?
Yeah, it's a lot of butthurt. A lot of butthurt, man. But
a lot of pain. A lot of open wounds from abusive southern
dads. Well, it comes from...
Stepdads.
Well, You know what it comes from? It comes from the fact that I think a lot of people had pie-in-the-sky dreams on what they were going to get out of this without the reality of it. And
yeah, I'm telling you, the reality
is... The reality of it's shit.
There's nothing Nobody in New Orleans it. Ever. So this is a college for a scene that's relevant. The only two scenes, in my opinion, that are relevant are New York and Los Angeles. You have to live there if you want to be... Pretty in much. My opinion, that's my opinion.
Chicago's third place in a... Right. Weird sort of way because it's come around. But yeah, pretty much. And then the road. The road is a scene.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people don't get is that road comics get a bad rap, but the road itself is a scene. Mm-hmm. And road comics know each other. It doesn't matter where they live. They're not attached to a geographical location. They're attached to, did you work for Zone? Did you work for Yoder? Did you work for, you know, and how many of you have moved on to Carnival Cruise Lines? And how many right. of you guys are doing military shows now? And it's a great growth opportunity because you perform in front of all of America. You don't just do this hipster little club that serves PBR on draft on Tuesday nights every week, which is going to give you a feedback loop as to your talent and your material that will not work when you try to take it outside of that feedback loop.
That is so brilliant that you said that, because I've been thinking the biggest problem with a very intense cultish clique in a comedy scene that agrees with everyone. So if there's 12 people in a clique that's very, very tight and they agree with each other all the time, they're not going to say that joke sucks.
That doesn't work.
Don't do that anymore.
No, they're going to say, oh my God, that's so groundbreaking. And then when it doesn't work, well, fuck the audience. They didn't understand
they
it.
They didn't get it.
You're like, oh my God, the whole point here
you're
is
curating
to make you...
art in your own head yeah. at that point. And it's not like, how do I get to be the funniest person in the world?
It's how can I be the funniest person in this clique?
Right.
And that's the problem with alt scenes outside of New York and L.A. Inside of New York and L.A., they still tend to have some sort of you got to flush a toilet. If you keep putting shit in a toilet, it's just going to overflow and it's going to be full of shit. You got to flush the toilet. And a lot of the little alt scenes in different cities, especially smaller markets, they don't flush their own toilet. They just keep throwing shit in the same fucking poo receptacle until they're covering their own shit. And they think that smells great because that's what they're used to. And it's like somebody else comes in and goes, oh, no, fuck no, man.
Yeah.
This is horrible. Fuck you, you don't understand.
And what you're saying is, if you don't book... let's say you run a mic, and you book out of the 12 people in your clique, there's six spots every week. So you just go, those six, those six, those six, those six, those six, those six.
It's the same name syndrome, yes.
So your show is going to start to smell a lot like shit if you don't get some new fucking blood that keeps those six, 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 six honest.
On their toes. And you get...
You gotta have new people circulating
challenge
in.
Challenge yourself. I mean, when
even
I...
Even if they're gonna say, you know what, I didn't like that joke. You gotta have the ego to go, you know what, you're right. That joke sucks. I'll stop doing it.
90% of growth in this industry is failure.
Yeah.
90% of growth is failure. You have to fail over and over and over again to see where you don't fail. And that's the part that they don't get is that... Just because you get accolades and hugs and high fives from the same crowd over and over and over again, and maybe one of you makes it. Like, say, one of the comics from this group gets seen, gets a Conan, gets a couple of Comedy Centrals. All of a sudden, that's validation for what they're doing. Not really.
Right.
Because if you really watch what that comic did, they adjusted, they went out, they challenged themselves, they broke out of the circle.
You're they went not... to a different city for a long time.
That's the first thing I did when I got to a point where I thought I had feature length. I thought I had 30. Is I drove to fucking Billings, Montana from here.
Right.
That's as far away as you could get from New Orleans.
Right.
Billings, Montana. I said, fuck it. I'm going to do 2 weeks, triple run up in the Northwest. Nobody knows me. I don't know anyone. And my first two shows, I was lucky enough to have a comic. Great guy, Dan Ellison. Educated redneck out of Virginia Beach. Best cat in the world. Pulled me aside after the first show and he goes, Bill, I'm going to tell you one thing. Got too goddamn many words. So he goes, they don't know you. They don't know your vocabulary. You're a smart man. You're obviously well learned. Book read. They don't give a shit. Write your jokes. Take half those words out make your jokes tighter. He goes, if you come in under 30, I'll cover your extra time.
Hmm.
And I did. I went to the hotel. I sat down. I fucking ripped shit apart. I did surgery on my act.
Yeah.
19 minutes. And for I was supposed to do 30 to get paid. I did 19. He covered the extra. Didn't tell the booker. And then as we toured the rest of the week, we would add shit back in, but we would do it in such a way as to make it work. And then the next headliner I worked with, I was lucky because it was in Guy O'Belum, who's a really cool cat out of Bay Area and massive stoner. Fucking awesome. Some best weed in the world. And he was the same way. He's like, look, I'm going to help you. And he helped. And that's what we did. Back in the day, you took people under your wing and you helped them. One of the women that they hate so much, the same group of people hates Yvonne as much as they hate this friend of mine, Caroline Picard. Now, Caroline is a 60-something-year-old, very abrasive, right-wing-ish, 60-something-year-old Cajun woman who has been working in comedy longer than almost anyone I know. And she took me on the road with her for years as her opener. And we would get into screaming matches. We didn't think alike politically. We didn't think alike in so many different ways. But I learned so much from her watching her on stage and watching how she would watch me and say, okay,
right,
try this, do this. Maybe right. You're not doing that right. And because of her, I became a headliner.
It's the ability to see faults in yourself.
Yes.
And it's the ability to self-knowledge. It's the ability to go, that guy just spent, you know, time to tell me what was wrong about my act. Maybe he's right about everything and let me change everything.
Or maybe that he was wrong about 50% of it, but that other 50%, I'll try.
Right. And that other 50% is going to elevate your game. And if you never heard that, you would have been stuck in that rut if you hadn't got that lecture about being too wordy, getting to the joke. Do joke, right. Joke.
And that's the problem with the scene as it exists now, is that there's not a lot of mentoring going on. It's a lot of people condemning and mocking and pulling the fucking...
And giving scarlet letters to people who... wrote a Twitter message.
Heard about the rape allegations on this gentleman, and I'm not going to
Maybe we're talking about different people, probably.
No, I think we're talking about the same one. I'm not going to weigh in, except that it blows my mind because I can't even picture it. Now, I'm not going to say he didn't do it. I'm not going to say anything other than social media is not the fucking place to air that kind of goddamn shit
out.
It's not.
It's the police.
Go to the cops. Did somebody try to rape you?
Right.
Go to the fucking police.
Right.
Don't air this, and then don't color somebody like Yvonne because she booked somebody without the knowledge of this bullshit. All of a sudden color a whole festival and anybody associated with
it.
But
I'm saying that person was not booked on this festival.
Well, of course not.
But it's like there's all these outliers where the same pattern happens. It's like there's a little clique, and if you do anything to upset one of the 12 who all have the same opinions about everything, you are scorched earth for life. And they don't go, oh, well, I actually see that this comic is like going out to mics 5 times a week. No, you're outside the clique, and therefore, we're going to justify a reason. Do you know, okay, Scientologists, there's something called a suppressive person in Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somebody who, if you watch the movie Going Clear, they're like, oh, you know what? I found out that all this like stuff about aliens is all bullshit. So then what they'll do is they'll dig through your life.
And trash you.
And trash you.
Yeah.
And destroy you. From information that they've gathered while you were holding tin cans
common,
in your office.
Yeah, it's a very common technique used in psychological warfare.
Nobody can contemplate walking in to the hole and staying there if they just come from the outside world. And that's what's hard for anybody to understand, is none of the people that were in the hole had just walked out of, you know, a job at the Village Voice. They're all people who had years and years and years of indoctrination into this is how things are, and this is what's right, and this is what's acceptable, and this is what you tolerate, and here's what you put up with. So it's the thing that I really felt like I missed in my listing of why we stay, is that incremental increase in degradation that occurs, and it takes a long time, and pretty soon you're at somewhere where you look and you go, are you kidding me? Like, for more than a year, I slept on the fucking floor, and I was fed slop, and I was in a building that had bars on the doors and windows. I wasn't allowed out, and I was supposed to sit around in there and circle jerk myself into fucking a new state of existence where now I'm suddenly acceptable to Miscavige because I've confessed to, you know, whatever heinous things satisfied his prudent sense of right and wrong. And I maybe I got a bunch of other people to do it, and that was even better than me getting, you know, if I could pummel someone else into admitting shit that he likes to hear, that's even better than if I do it.
They say David Miscavige never assaulted Mike Rinder or anyone else, and they've given us a lot of information they claim proves Mike Rinder is a liar and that he assaulted his ex-wife. They also claim that in 2002, Mike Rinder was sacked from his job for violations of fiduciary duty and malfeasance. Sounds serious, doesn't it?
Right, to just pin someone as a handicap abuser or pin somebody as a rapist denier. Whatever it is,
yeah.
You pin them as that, they're that forever, you never have to talk to them.
Hey, bro, you know what? Good chat, very intense. I have to pee and perform now.
I do too.
Which is all right. Good timing, but yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. This is very cathartic.
I know, right?
No shit.
All right, cool.